My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
One, two, three, four!
World one, baby!
Extreme.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 165, and it's about the themes of Ultimo Dragon. And today I am joined by a returning guest here on the show. He is one of the hosts of Open the Voice Gate on the VOW Network and the main man of Spears Ovations. It's Mike Spears. Hello again, Mike.
Hey, Andrew, thanks so much for having me. I have now watched so many different versions of Separados in preparation to talk all about the principal today.
We'll get to that one for sure. Yeah. But it's great to have you back on, as always, here, Mike. I think last time you were on, since then, you've actually moved, right? You're in Texas now, I believe?
Yes, I think this is the first show that we've done since my big move. I was based in the foothills of the Appalachians for about 8 years, and I moved back to my hometown of Fort Worth, Texas in 2023. And it's actually quite fortunate that we are recording right now, because Andrew, today is the first day that we broke our 100 degree stretch throughout all of July. We're 97 today. 97, baby.
Mazel tov. Congratulations on that.
Hey, it is something. I do have to say that, like, getting readjusted to Texas summers, it is something that you do go like, come on, 97, come on, 97. I don't need 105 again. Oh, it's 106. That's a whammy.
It's been pretty hot here too lately, so don't feel too bad. You're not alone in this case, so don't worry about that. Yeah, but actually, it's funny. I'm in the process of moving myself. It'll be a much shorter commute for me. Literally down the street, you know, from where I'm at right now. So that'll be pretty easy, but. Overall, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can agree on this, Mike. You know, the whole moving process is such a giant pain in the ass. You know,
and it's one of those things that distance, like, you're so fortunate that you are so close, because I feel like distance just compounds everything. And even stuff like a summer move is the worst. So, I'm keeping you in my thoughts because of that, because, geez, I could just only imagine, like, trying to move now, let alone up in Boston area. That just has to be harsh right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you getting, you know, a house is different than me and my, you know, new tiny studio apartment, of course. But still, you know, the market in Boston, yeah, it's insane. Everyone's scrambling for a place. I mean, I got super lucky because the one that I got was listed the day I found it online, and I jumped on it as soon as I could, because, yeah, it's a mad dash, man. It's nuts.
That does not surprise me. I got my place I ended up with was on the market 4, I actually saw a preview. It was, I saw the house before it went on the market, and I offered right as it went on the market. It's just something that everything is so accelerated and insane and overinflated at this point with everything that I'm wondering for if we're going to reach a certain point where people just go like, what are houses? Do we need those anymore? Just because it's gotten that insane of a process.
Yeah. My favorite thing is, you know, you go on like apartments.com or rent.com or whatever, and if there's a listing there and there's a phone number, you call it, no one answers. Leave a message, no one gets back to you. Or, what I love especially, no contact info whatsoever. You know, that's also so much fun, Mike.
The online form, they'll reach out to you. The online form, they'll get back to you. So in your process, have you had to deal with realtors? Because I've gone through the whole gamut of that, and I feel like no... I am not trying to go on an anti-realtor campaign this Sunday, but it is something that, like, just being exposed to this sort of thing, and I just go like, oh, realty, if you're someone that you are just a little bit flaky, I have the job for you. Go be a realtor.
Well, the guy I worked with on this one was very, very helpful, so there is at least one good realtor out there in the world, Mike. So there is that comfort, I suppose.
All right. We're all moving to Massachusetts. We're taking advantage of Andrew's good realtor. We're all going to – it's going to be no stress. We're not going to worry about closing fees. We're all just going to go up there to do with this guy that's probably going to go insane with all the wrestling people who just suddenly have decided to use his realty service.
Well, this might even be even crazier here. I'm moving in on September 1st. But I'm flying out the very next day to Chicago for All Out. So it's going to be a very busy weekend for your pal Andrew there, Mike. So,
hey, I did something kind of similar. I departed my move over WrestleMania week. So you, at least the nice thing is that you'll get the keys, you'll get the stuff over there. Like, you maybe will tackle a box or two, but then you're like, you know what? Don't have to worry about this. I'm going to Chicago, baby. I'm out of here.
I don't have too much stuff either, so it won't be that bad, I don't think so. Here you go, yeah. But anyway, Mike, today we're going to talk about one of the legends of Japanese pro wrestling, the father of the Dragon System, the principal of Dragon Gate himself. Yes, it's Ultimo Dragon. And funny enough, this is technically not the first time I've done an Ultimo episode, because a few years ago, I did a solo show about a dub theme that Ultimo had during the J-Crown tournament, Secret by Steve Vouse. But no dub themes here today, Mike. We're talking about the proper songs here. And Ultimo, like I said, he's a legend, you know, in the world of Lucha Rezu and all that whole style. He's one of the guys, capital T, capital G. And especially in, you know, Toriumon and that whole lineage, he's the guy, Mike.
Yeah. So it's something that the overall, I always call it a tree just because it's a lot easier way, I think, for people to conceptualize it. The root of the tree is Gran Hamada in the 80s with Universal Lucha Libre. But then in the early 90s, you have what's considered kind of the second generation of Lucha-S. And Ultimo kind of is the person first and foremost when you talk about 90s. Wrestlers of that style, and it's something that's even harkening back to how he developed his vein of that and CML, very much similar to Gran Hamada. But I mean, you look at how this tree kind of developed, and it's really kind of fascinating to me. Like, you have Ultimo in Mexico, while all of these other wrestlers of his size that were recruited by like Gran Hamada and weren't able to get through the dojo systems. And it kind of produced this style that with him, Hamada, of course, is the grandfather of it, but then also like great Sasuke, personal favorite of my Masako, Masato Yakushiji, a lot of people of that era, Grand Nanawa, come out of that. And I think when you really think about this style, when you really boil down to it, there's two wrestlers you really think of with it, if we're talking about it overall. And if the first name that doesn't come to your mind is Ultimo Dragon, when you're talking about the combination of Lucha Libre and traditional Japanese pro wrestling and a junior heavyweight rapper, then he's probably the next name on your lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first time I saw him, it was 2003 SmackDown. And at the time, obviously, I had no idea about his history before WWE. You know, I had no idea about Lucha Rez and what that was or what Toriumon was. I had no idea about his time in Mexico and all that stuff in New Japan and war and other Japanese companies. I mean, you know, the picture of him with the J. Crown belts, that famous picture, and of course his WCW stuff as well. I had no idea about any of that, and they never really gave him a serious push in WWE either. But I still got hooked on him because he had a cool look. I love the mask and the gear. He had a cool entrance, which we'll get to later on, and he had a really cool move, the Asai DDT, which just blew my mind back in the day. And in fact, true story here, when I bought Here Comes the Pain, the first guy I wrestled as was Ultimo Dragon, because I wanted to do the Asai DDT in the game. You know, and as time has gone on, I've definitely learned and watched a bunch of his stuff from the 90s and from Japan and all that. And now I see him, you know, in Dragon Gate, of course, nowadays. But even as a kid, you know, without any knowledge of all that stuff, he just had this kind of alluring aura about him in a way, Mike.
Yeah, he has, like, it's almost mystical in a way. And it's something that a kind of aura that I feel like is absent. That because, like you, I had a very similar thing. I'm a little bit older than you, but my first exposure to Ultimo Dragon was through WCW NWO World Tour. It was one of those things that you see this guy, and I was a WWF kid at that time when I during the Attitude Era or whatever, the late 90s. But the WCW games were much better, even though. So like we would always go get World Tour or Revenge. And having Ultimo Dragon there, because like you had all the goofy guys at the end that when you're 10 or 11, you don't know, like, okay, Aki, because of everything, this is actually adapted from Virtual Pro Wrestling, and these are Aki Man's Misaharu Misawa. You don't know that when you're 10 or 12. You think like, oh, those are like weird add-on characters, but you see this mask guy, and he just seems so cool. And I think the thing about the 2003 and WWE thing and all the layers to this is it develops a character in a way that you don't really see nowadays. And I don't know if that is just the change of pro wrestling media or what have you, but Ultimo kind of is the last of the breed of the, I would say, larger than life superstar, because I don't feel that way when I happen on a show and it's Kazuchika Okada coming out. I don't happen that way of John Moxley or CM Punk, but you see Ultimo and he's kind of this last world warrior that has this aura that just from the jump, I think whenever anyone first comes across him, it's impossible not to be drawn in by just the trappings of Ultimo Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the mask does help in a lot of ways. I mean, there's that air of mystery about him, I guess, his face covered, I suppose. Yeah. But I mean, you know, as far as Ultimo goes, you know, there's Ultimo the wrestler, obviously. We can talk about him all day, but Ultimo the trainer, too. I mean, look at the list of students that he had. It's Shima, it's Don Fuji, it's Dragon Kid, you know, Genki, Yoshino, and Doi, all the old favorites, and many more. And yes, some guy named Kazuchika Okada, you know, that old fella. And I'm not saying that Okada owes half his paycheck to Ultimo, but a little taste won't hurt every now and again, Mike, I think, you know, a little little contribution to the old retirement fund every now and again, you know, wouldn't hurt.
I think Ultimo got his, he took the payday in 2007 is what I'll say on Kazuchika Okada. He had that chance for that, but yeah, I would imagine 2023, he would rather, you know, still have royalties off the old Rainmaker. And I think that would almost put in a full like pool on his massive estate in Mexico. But it's something that he's such a unique figure, if only for so in 5 months from now, we'll come across January 31st, which will actually be the 25th anniversary of the Dragon System's arrival in Japan. And it's considered the actual like anniversary date of the Dragon System. And even from that day, it not just training, he understood that in 1999, with how the wrestling industry was working, at least in Japan, that there was a massively underserved market with women and teenagers. And he focused on that in 2009. And if you look at how the industry has changed over the last 25 years, I think that there's a direct through line with how he presented Toriumon that day to how the with New Japan, with how they have tried to promote, with Stardom, with all that, I think all of that harkens back to, at least one way or another, Ultimo Dragon and Toriumon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good looking people sell tickets is the that's kind of the main ethos. Yeah. Yeah, but and nowadays Ultimo, he's still wrestling, he's still around. He is like we said, the legend of Dragon Gate, the principal of the high school back in the fold. And obviously, Mike, he's not the Ultimo of yesteryear in the ring. That's for sure, because he's 56 years old. He's wrestled for over 35 years, and he had to retire at one point because of an injury, nerve damage in his arm because of a surgery. But look, he gets in there in these tag matches. He does his few spots. They hit the finish, and he goes home. And you know what, Mike? Hey, look, at this point, fine by me.
Yeah, and it's something that it's such a unique thing with Ultimo back in Dragon Gate. Now, we're actually coming up, like next year will be 5 years of in the era of Ultimo being a person talked about versus just whispered and dispersion said. But it's something where it's kind of interesting, and it's one of those things that I think kind of like an ongoing discourse with Dragon Gate amongst international fans, as what is this Dragon Gate? Is this the Dragon Gate that I knew whenever I got in, and versus that? And Ultimo kind of plays a part of that just because of his presence and the fact that this is a businessman. We'll probably talk about how much of a businessman Ultimo Dragon is several times here, but it's something where at the end of the day, he goes in, he kind of has, I would say, virtually the same match, as long as it's not a big show or things going on with him. He goes in there. I can almost call it, it's like Rich Craich and Pentagon Jr. at AAW. You could pretty much go through the motions, but it's something that it is just remarkable to kind of see that happen. A guy that is willing to kind of do a house show match, and it's not a bad house show match. It's just Ultimo. He is a part of it, and then you deal with that, so you get the incredible mask match and the feud he had with Diamante. It's kind of a give and take, but it's a very different kind of feuding than you would talk about the J Crown and Great Sasuke 20 years ago. It's its own thing, but it's kind of Ultimo and Twilight has been a really fun thing to see, I guess I'll say.
Mm-hmm. And I do love how he keeps teasing the Acai moonsault every now and again, because, you know, I don't think he's going to be hitting that one anytime soon. But you never know, Mike. I mean, crazier things have happened. So
we got the Acai DDT. That was
we did get that. Thankfully. Yes. Yes. So
the moonsault, who knows? I think that it's something that he's just going to constantly go. And as long as the crowds react to it, he's going to make that tease. I don't think he's ever going up for it. I've watched enough Charlie Brown to know that Charlie's not going to kick that football.
Look, if he's not climbing over a cage, he's not doing a springboard moonsault. Okay, it's just it is what it is. It is what it is. But
that's Ultimo for you, though.
Yeah. Well, let's get to these themes here, and the way we're going to do this one here, Mike, we'll do it in four sections. We're going to do a medley of his themes that he had at CMLL in Mexico. Then we're going to do a medley of his WCW themes. Then we're going to go over to his WWE theme, and then we'll do the big finale with his best-known theme, Separados. So we'll streamline this thing, make it nice and easy, and really embody the spirit of Ultimo Dragon, Mike. Get in, get out, and sip a nice drink.
Absolutely, and if we're so lucky, we can get back to our hacienda and get into our mask and cigar room before 8 o'clock.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we'll start off here in Mexico. Dragon, of course, started his career in Japan, in places like UWA and UWF. Not that one, a different one. Trained by another Lucha legend you mentioned earlier there, Mike, Gran Hamada, under his real name, Yoshihiro Asai. Which, by the way, Asai Moonsault, if you're wondering where the name came from, there you go. But in 1991, he goes to CMLL in Mexico and becomes Ultimo Dragon, the Last Dragon. And he had a bunch of themes there over the years, all the ones I could find anyway. So let's enjoy this little medley of Ultimo Dragon CMLL themes. Hit it, Johnny.
Los invito a bailar sopa de caracol. Guatanegui con su yupi pati, yupi pati. Yuli, Roni, Guanaga. Guatanegui con su yupi pati, yupi pati. Yuli,
konsu watawi negi guanaga watawi negi konsu watawi negi guanaga si tu quieres bailar sopa de caracol watanegi konsu.
Songs in order here are Sopa de Caracol by Caramelo Caliente, Drifted in a Deeper Land by Ray Lynch, Chung Kuo by Vangelis, Panama by Van Halen, London no Yoru no Ame by Michio Miyagi and Tomoko Sunazaki, Back to the Future by Alan Silvestri and the Atatime Orchestra, and Killer Instinct by Robin Beanland and Graham Norgate. So a very eclectic mix of music here, Mike, that's for sure. Everything from Latin dance music to ethereal new age to electronica, Van Halen, Back to the Future. It's a real hodgepodge, as they say. But listen, it's Mexico, and the music stylings of Lucha Libre are quite chaotic, I think. So it's to be expected, Mike, for sure.
Yeah, this is just a show that for those of y'all that liked when Rush used Chris Benoit's WWE theme song, whenever he was using that theme song, there's a rich tradition. There's a rich tradition of that kind of stuff. I guess like the way that I would kind of look at this medley in a lot of ways is that you kind of like, your eyes drawn towards it when I'm looking at like the playlist. It's Panama, it's Van Halen, and it's something where when we're talking about early 90s and Ultimo, and especially like the giant scuttlebutt that one Yoshihiro Asai is allegedly quite a handsome man. That I just
We'll get to that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I just think like he loses the mass match. He has to wrestle the remainder of his career as Asai. And I just think Panama works perfect for like babyface. You know, like you could almost hear in your head the come on baby, a undercard babyface says as they're coming out to this music. Like it's ultimate, it's perfect for a babyface unmasked Ultimo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, to me, this medley does, I think, the best job of expressing Ultimo's existence within the two worlds, you know, as the Lucha Rezu guy. You know, on the one hand, he made his bones in Mexico. The gimmick came from Mexico. He learned the Lucha style. So that is represented with a song like Suba de Caracol, of course. And on the other hand, he is Japanese. He is the dragon. He's a Pearl legend. So, yeah, you've also got the East Asian music in there too, so it plays to both sides of that coin, I think. And yes, there's Van Halen as well, but that's just a kick-ass song, and Ultimo did kick-ass in his heyday, so that works too, Mike, I suppose.
Yeah, and it is something that I find very interesting, the propensity for like Ray Lynch and Vangelis, like that style of not even new age. I know Ray Lynch was very much against that, but the alternative music that kind of was coming out there. I mean, like the thing that got me was I did not know that there was another Vangelis song other than Chariots of Fire.
He's had a very big career. Rest in peace, Vangelis. He did a lot of music over the years. So, so he's very prolific for sure.
Yeah. However, the thing that got me what went before, as I was listening to the medley, getting to the last song there, I was going, oh, that's very familiar. And then looking up exactly who Robin Beanland and Graham Norgate are, they are at one time the house composers for Rare Entertainment behind the game Killer Instinct.
Yep.
That's the thing from it.
It's from the game. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of perfect for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to me, the big question mark is the Back to the Future theme.
Yeah.
That's kind of the odd man out here, you know, but I'm just picturing like Doc Brown stepping out of a DeLorean and being like, it's your kids, Ultimo. They're going to start their own promotion without you. There's going to be a monkey scandal and something called Stronghearts. We've got to stop them. You know, I can picture that for sure, Mike.
So Shima's Biff Tannen, right? Like, there's no other way. Like that has to be him. Like, he's the one that, you know, the timelines would be greatly manipulated, that there would be a world, that there would be a giant great casino.
Listen, I'm not saying I want Shima Land, you know, but it'd be a fun time, I think, for certain people. I think it'd be fun.
I bet the T-Hawk ride at Shima Land will be quite disappointing.
Oh, you. But moving on now to WCW, where Ultimo had his first and most noteworthy major American run. He was Cruiserweight champion. He was TV champion. He had Sonny Ono as his manager. But to me, the most famous part of that run was that when he got there, they called him the Ultimate Dragon for like the first year. And, you know, it's technically true because Ultimo can mean ultimate in Spanish. You know, an ultimate and last are synonyms. But His name is Ultimo Dragon, and it's an easy mistake to correct. And really, Mike, how hard is it to say the word Ultimo? Really, come on.
I mean, it's to the point that if I'm, in my regular day life, if I'm saying the phrase Ultimo, people know who I'm referring to. Like, that's the thing. And also, like, I'm certain I'm getting the time frame a little bit off here, but why would you call him Ultimate Dragon when you have Warrior in that company? Like, that seems completely like just a huge oversight. And that's not to mention that Mike Tenay, of all people, should have been able to go like, no, just call him Ultimo. Like, there's just giant. How did this happen? That's what I'm coming to, Andrew. How did this happen?
WCW, man. It's just that company. That company was very strange. But regardless, we do have another medley of songs here about Ultimo's themes in WCW. So let's hear the Ultimo / Ultimate / Ultravox / Ultramantis Dragon WCW medley. Hit it again, Johnny. Songs in this one, and they are Pacific Zone by Christian LaRue and Daniel Daris, Hard Attack by Christian Paulette and Fabian Chevalier, Tokyo Town by Nikki James and Nigel Sawyer, and 1,000 Sons by David Henschel. And you know, with the Mexico medley, we had a good amount of variety in terms of the styles of music. This one, not so much, because with the exception of Hard Attack, which is a very 90s computery, kind of metal-y song, every other song on this one pretty much just says the same thing. And that's, he's Asian. He's Asian. Do you get it? He's Asian. I mean, when you have songs called Pacific Zone and Tokyo Town, not much wiggle room for the genres there, Mike, I don't think.
Yeah, and I did a little look into these. Almost all of these are straight production library songs.
Yes.
So it is something where, I mean, this is the really sad thing that I think that we're only now, like over the, like the last 5 to 10 years, have been able to, like, wrestling industry finally growing up and growing up with society, just like applying, like, oh, you're from Asia, we have to have something that has vaguely Asian or Orientalist sounding things. Like, that's the shame about that. Whereas you look at the titles, Pacific Zone, Heart Attack, Tokyo Town, A Thousand Suns, those are great wrestling thing names, though. So at least he got better off there. I mean, I would want my theme used to be called Heart Attack.
Yeah, I mean, as stereotypical as they can be, they are very distinct with their naming. I will give them that, Mike, for sure.
I do wonder, like, so as a production musician, like, you're kind of just turning it out there. You usually have a partner, and that's why, like, most of them have, it's two composers there. I wonder how you come up with the names. Like, do you listen to, like, the driving beat of Heart Attack, and you go, like, we're going hard there, and it's attacking you? Well, Andrew, it has to be Heart Attack.
My God, you've got something there.
yeah, that's what I'm imagining it. And yes, this is like a 1980s production music video. You know, like, well, they're in the booth. You know, like, almost exactly like My Baby Parties All the Time is what I'm imagining. But with, like, two dorky guys who kind of look like Hall & Oates.
Yeah, no Rick James this time around, I don't think, for Heart Attack. Yeah.
You'll be lucky if you get his studio to film the video for Heart Attack.
Well, it being WCW, you know, these are songs that, you know, a lot of other Japanese wrestlers had over the years in that company. Surprise, surprise. You know, people like Antonio Inoki had these songs, and Masahiro Chono, and Akira Hokuto, and Otani, and even Shima. You know, when Shima was still Shima Nobunaga, he wrestled in WCW, and he had A Thousand Suns. That's his theme. So, just the way it went. And thankfully, nowadays, in a place like AEW or whatever, they'll give someone their own song. But back then, hey, look, if it's good for Pat Tanaka, it's good for Ultimo Dragon, Mike.
Yeah, and it is something that, like, going through DGUSA, and, like, that was, like, a time that, I mean, like, at least from my knowledge, I mean, the secret to how your music's getting played is that if you have the CD or if you're able to load it up on the phone. That was not the case back then, and how could it be the case for Ultimo at that time? But going through DGUSA and at a time where, like, you know that they care about that kind of stuff, and you hear an old theme, you're like, oh, okay, we're back to it. But yeah, it's something I want to go, and I think he has a book that I've not read that I've heard a lot about. Sonny Ono, probably, I know he sued WCW or Turner for racial discrimination, but just because of, like, that's where everyone went to was WCW. I mean, Yuji Nagata was over in WCW. Manabu Nakanishi, WCW.
Yeah, like Kurosawa, under the name Kurosawa, yeah.
And I guess it's something that, like, I've recently have gone into, like, Stan Hansen. I kind of want to see the inverse of that, because I feel like WCW was that place, but as you're saying, like, everyone got the production music, and it was not even something that it was completely slighted toward the Asian wrestlers. It's just everyone had that, unless you were friends with Jimmy Hart.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the idea of reusing these production library songs, that was true regardless of your race or whatever. I mean, so many guys would just get the same songs over and over again as the years went by. So it's not really like a Japanese thing specifically. It was just kind of the way it went. And unfortunately, when you have Japanese wrestlers, they kind of get shafted with the same kind of sound. So it just kind of, you know, that's kind of the reasoning there, I suppose. Yeah.
Right. And I think there's a lot of it that we have to realize that WCW was a part of Time Warner, and Time Warner had all those licenses. Like, some of these were Warner's music. So, mm-hmm. They were told to do the, hey, we're not paying any money for this. We have our own library. Pick something from that.
Yeah. And I also noticed, too, with these songs in particular, you know, they don't have as much of a punch to them either. You know, to me, they're more focused on, like, the exotic nature of the Far East, you know, than this guy's a badass. And, you know, say what you will about Van Halen, Panama has a punch to it. It has a drive. It's exciting. It's hard to get excited about... You know, it's hard to really get pumped up for that, Mike, you know?
Yeah, and you know what would be like the interesting compare and contrast? I'm blanking on what the final title was it, but Shingo Takagi's Dragon Gate theme. Because you have, like, the traditional instruments and rhythms and, like, this, but you still have the stingers and the driving beat that, you know, like, okay, Shingo, like, the time for him to make his entrance is here. He hits his pose on this note, and he always would. There just isn't that in a lot of production music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no personal craftsmanship in those songs like other songs would have, unfortunately. Yeah, but anyway, 2003, an unretired Ultimo Dragon, signs with WWE, debuting in Madison Square Garden, which is pretty cool. And they last there for about a year in the SmackDown Cruiserweight division. And really, Mike, to me, the two major highlights of Ultimo's run in WWE are A, tripping during his entrance at WrestleMania 20, and B, giving Stephanie McMahon the vapors with his dashing good looks, thus earning the nickname Ultimo Hottie. And let me tell you, Mike, the alternate timeline where Ultimo Dragon marries Stephanie and we get 15-time world champion Ultimo Dragon and Toriumon take over Brooklyn and all that good stuff, I want to go to there, Mike. I want to go to there.
Hey, if current muckrakers and social media scuttlebutt are true, Ultimo still got a chance.
I mean,
who's to say that, I'm surprised we've gone about a half an hour before me talking about it. If you look at Ultimo's Instagram, I know I refer to this a lot in Open the Voice Gate. This guy is leading a pretty idyllic life. Why wouldn't Stephanie McMahon want to go, like, tour the Cohiba factory in Havana? Why wouldn't she want to go to, like, he gets invited to, like, these fancy cocktail parties where it's Ultimo in a tuxedo in his mask. Like, Stephanie would fit in like a glove there. I for one, am hoping that that rumor is true and that both rumors are true and that they find each other late in life. I feel like that'd be good for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a photo from backstage at Mania 20 of all the Cruiserweight guys because they were all in a match together. And I remember seeing that photo for the first time and being like, who's that Asian guy? I don't recognize him at all. And then I realized, oh my God, that's Ultimo without the mask on. And yeah, he's a good looking guy. So, you know, I'm sure as time has gone on, he's gotten better with age too. So yeah, I can imagine any lady would be lucky to snag Ultimo for sure, Mike.
I mean, she might have to, like, go do a couple of tours where, I mean, Ultimo has his own merch table. Like, there's Dragon Gate, and you can go get your Madoka Kakuta towel, but you also have to go over to the Ultimo table, which has handled its own thing. Maybe it's something that, maybe, you know, she's taking a step back. Maybe she's okay with helping out her partner and running his table at Kobe Sambo Hall once a month. Who's to say?
What could have been? But listen, never say never, Mike. It's pro wrestling, after all. Never say never.
Hey, this guy is perfect proof of that.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, Ultimo's WWE theme is by Jim Johnston, and it's called Dragon. Jim got the assignment to do an Ultimo Dragon theme, and damn it, he made an Ultimo Dragon theme. We've got the Dragon Roar sound effect, we've got the Japanese string music and flutes in there as well, and we saw that in the WCW medley, you know, of course as well, but what this has is that oomph that we didn't really have before, because of those classic Jim Johnston crunchy guitars. So I think as far as, like, American company Ultimo Dragon is concerned, I'd say, like, his theme here really checks off all of the boxes of what you would want and expect from an Ultimo Dragon theme, I suppose, Mike.
Yeah, and it's something where, like, as you said, like, Jim Johnston, like, understands how to construct, like, a wrestling theme. So he brings in the guitars, adding in the extra element there, having the stinger moments. And it's something where outside of Separatos, this is the song I identify with Ultimo Dragon. I feel like you might be similar with how you first came across them. It's just a great theme song, and it fits in, and it is something that, I mean, to this day, I I know Ultimo does carry around his music, but I don't. If I went to an indie show that somehow Ultimo was there, I am not paying my $200 for his mask, but I would feel pretty okay if instead of Separatos, we heard Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mentioned earlier how when I was a kid, I loved the entrance he had in WWE where the music hits, he comes out, he would lift his arms up, and he would bring his hands together, and he would force him down, and fire would blast out of these pyro machines. I thought it was such a cool entrance. And I'd say bring it back, but I don't think Dragon Gate has the pyro budget, unfortunately, for that kind of thing, so...
No, can you just imagine, like, small town, like, 200 people there, and then they have fireworks there? They did do pyro for, like, one hometown show, but it was paid for the network. Ultimo would bankrupt them. Easily bankrupt them.
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting is that after Ultimo left WWE, this song was later used by Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. This became his song there, which makes sense. You know, Dragon and Dragon, of course. But on the album WWE Uncaged, this song in particular is listed as Ricky's theme. And on Uncaged 2, there's another song called Dragon, listed as Ultimo's theme. Is a remixed version of this song without the Asian music elements in there, without the flutes, the strings. It's just a Dragon roar at the start and the guitar riffs. But Ultimo never used that version. He only used this version. So it can be a little bit confusing there if you check out, you know, the albums, because as far as I know, Mike, this is the only WWE song Ultimo had.
Yeah, and I want to remember, I might be wrong about this, but I want to remember that I feel like Dragon, if you go on the network for themes that are dubbed over, especially like in the 80s when they would have other music playing before they had their own production music, I feel like Dragon got used a whole lot as a dub over theme, especially for like the WCW stuff when like you would have Inoki or others showing up. I feel like you hear Dragon a whole lot even outside of the Ultimo context.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't shock me at all. Right, yeah. Especially for Ricky, who had, you know, Sirius as his song.
Oh, absolutely.
So, if they dub that over with Dragon, then yeah, I could see why. Yeah, yeah. So the final part of the episode here, the piece de resistance, is the song that Ultimo is best known for using over the years. He's had it since the 90s in various promotions like New Japan, War, Michinoku Pro, Dragon Gate, obviously, All Japan, America, Mexico, etc., etc., etc. It's by Luis Miguel off the album Busca Una Mujer. This is Separados. So I'll be honest, Mike. For a second, I thought about pulling a Dragon Gate Network and playing the first few seconds of this song and then muting it right away, you know, for the rest of it. Just for the gag, you know, just to be funny. But I thought better of it. So, yeah.
Just play right until the tempo changes and then immediately just say, like, that this audio has been muted for licensing reasons.
Yes. A big robot voice with the whole thing. Yeah. But anyway, yes, this is the iconic Ultimo theme. And, you know, on its face, it's kind of a random pick. This Latin pop song about the anguish of separated lovers. It doesn't really scream pro wrestling or Ultimo Dragon. But again, if you know Ultimo's backstory, if you know about his time in Mexico and his immersion into that culture, then him having a Spanish song makes a lot more sense. You know, I'm sure he heard this song on the radio when he was in Mexico, perhaps, or he bought the album over there and thought, you know what? I want this as my song. Again, topic-wise, it may be a bit unfitting, but culturally and personally, you could see why he would have it, Mike.
Yeah, and I think the cultural thing is what makes this so special. It wasn't until Ultimo came back in 2019 that I came across Luis Miguel. I had no awareness of who this guy was, and because of Separados and like discovering about Luis Miguel, so for people who don't know, his nickname is El Sol de Mexico. I said Sol, not Hijo. So he's the son of Mexico. He is considered, and Frank Sinatra said this as much when he was alive, he's considered the Latin Frank Sinatra. Before Bad Bunny was a thing, he had all the highest grossing tours in Mexico and across Latin America. And have you had a chance to watch Luis Miguel perform the song? Like, I know I've been going off about this. Like, he is such like a magnetic performer that it makes sense that Ultimo maybe was like flipping through the channels or was in the car in the late 80s, early 90s, and he heard this and he's immediately like, oh, that is me. And with a song that all the lyrics are in Spanish, Luis Miguel is the one like major Latin American musician who never crossed over to English in the 90s. So when you talk about Selena or Gloria Estefan, he was the one who stuck to his guns. But the lyrics in Spanish, it makes a lot of sense how this would resonate with someone as soulful as one Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah, I mean, besides everything, it's a great song. I mean, the opening with the dun 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 on the keyboards, and it builds up with the background choir, and the bass line's popping, and you know, Luis Miguel is just pitch perfect in the song. The chorus is so catchy too. I mean, lyrics aside, it's a damn good entrance theme, Mike.
Oh yeah. It is like you could totally see like. Like the rising crescendo, I think, is the thing. And it's something where the of his old themes, the ones that kind of reminds me more of, at least of the style, is Vangelis. And it has like the certain like late 80s heavy synth tone to it, harpsichord, like the electric harpsichord. And it is something that's befitting of a legend. It is a theme song that if you're Ultimo Dragon, you could come up to the song and everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is Ultimo. This is that. You can't have Kaito Nagano come out to this music without it outright being on its face. I mean, there's a reason why they made a big joke on when Big R or Big Boss Shimizu, I always call him Big R, Big Boss Shimizu became Bukotomo Dragon and did his own cover of Separados as his theme music. There's a reason why that worked so well, because this is such an emblematic and just... just like a legendary song that it does not make sense for anyone else other than Ultimo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it would feel weird for him to not have the song. Like, we've just gotten so used to it over the years, it just feels right for him to come out to it. And would it be easier if they didn't have to mute it every time on the network when he comes out? Sure, of course, but it's Ultimo Dragon. Like, he's going to come out to Separados whether you can play it or not. It's just the way it goes, Mike.
Yeah, and... we asked Jay Church one of the times he was on Open the Voice Gate. For those who don't know, Jay is the English broadcaster for Dragon Gate. And also, basically, if there's anything you see out of Dragon Gate that isn't English, Jay translated that for you. But he actually explained to me the entire scenario about why they have this muted versus like the other music, whereas some of the other reason, like Separados is a uniquely difficult song for them to license, and they want to do this. They don't want to mute it, but it's just everything. I mean, when you're dealing with someone who, like, Luis Miguel is that big of a star, things are run a little different with them. So it's going to be muted, I guess, into perpetuity unless Ultimo wants to do his own cover, which he might.
Yeah, try getting a Taylor Swift song licensed and see how much that runs you. You know, I mean, he's huge. And I think a few years ago, Billboard did this list of like the greatest Latin American artists of all time. Enrique Iglesias was number one. He was number two. So yeah, he's just a monster icon of a guy for sure.
And he has an incredible head of hair. Like, yes. I'm looking at this photo. You've seen the album art for this right now. I have the Genius page pulled up. I have the album art. He looks like he's never spent a day inside. Perfect tan. And his hair, it's what Tetsuya Naito wishes he could do.
Yeah.
Just flowing wild.
Just flowing. Yeah. And also this too, this is not the only Luis Miguel song we played on the show before, because Akira Hokuto came out to Oro Dele. That was her song. And you want to talk about odd dichotomies. Akira Hokuto, this violent, badass woman, just having these crazy, hard-hitting matches and coming out to Oro Dele. <ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. laughs> Now, that's an odd dichotomy, Mike.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's something where, of course, with Hokuto, you have LCO as like a reason why she would have come across it. I wonder like if it's one of those things that if you are going to work abroad, like what would happen nowadays? Like, I don't know if you're able to like come across like someone who is just like such like a tour de force within their own culture that like you're like, oh, I'm wrestling in Mexico. If I get a Luis Miguel song, that's probably going to endear me to local crowds. I don't know if you could do that anymore. I don't know, like, if somehow you would go and find, like, a Blackpink song or, like, as you were saying, Taylor Swift. I don't know if you could do that, but I feel like Luis Miguel is, at least within Mexico, is kind of a figure that I'm certain that Akira Hokuto and Ultimo Dragon were touched and they were like, oh, I have to have Luis Miguel as my theme music. But there's a part of me that wonders on the other side of the coin. That's a pretty crafty maneuver.
For sure. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And Mike, thank you again for being here. Always so much fun when you're on here talking about the various peoples of Dragon Gate world. And no one bigger than Ultimo Dragon, that's for sure. So thanks, man. This was just a real blast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Ultimo is someone that I feel like one day I will have like a fully formed, like complete take on him. But until then, it's ever evolving. So and like his music, ever evolving until he found the perfect thing. One day I'll come to that. But thank you again for having me on. It's always been so much fun coming on Music of the Mat and talking theme musics with you, Andrew. Thank you again.
Oh, of course. Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the best way to keep track of me is to on Twitter, Fujihaya on Twitter. I am co-host Open the Voice Gate every week with K-Slow. I would argue that no one covers an individual genre or a promotion of wrestling as well as we do at Open the Voice Gate. But we've been doing that for 7 years now, and we're in the thick of post-Kobe World King of Gate tournament season, so it's a fun time to pick up that as well. Spears of Asians is my loosely named collection of other wrestling products. I stream twice a week right now on there. You can come check me out on Wednesdays at 12:30 Central, lunchtime streams, and then Friday at 1:30 as well. I'm still trying to play Fight Forever, Andrew, and I've kind of come to a point of it that it doesn't feel like a complete game, but we're going to try to figure that out more on stream, and that's twitch.tv/spiritsovations.
I believe in you, Mike. I believe in you all the way, so I got your back, man, for sure.
I got turned on by Pac.
What?
Me, America's sweetheart. Turned on by Pac.
Oh, what a bastard. What a bastard.
I mean, I'm the person first and foremost. I don't think anyone who follows the way of the hammer as devoutly as I do. But thanks again, Andrew. This was an absolute blast, and thanks for having me on again.
Definitely. And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, just like Open the Voice Gate. You can find other great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. VoicesOfWrestling.com/Discord for all discussions and comments. VoicesOfWrestling.com/donate for any donations. Just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat or open the voice gate. Either one's fine. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. Mike, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
Thank you.
All right, for Mike Spears, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.